This episode is brought to you by Dietz and Watson.
Molly, it's time we have the talk about hot dogs.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm looking for a hot dog that's the real deal, Matthew.
Like a classic hot dog that, like, when you think of, like, the platonic ideal of a hot dog, I recommend Dietz and Watson's Dietz dogs.
Ah, well, I've heard that they're handcrafted and made using only Dietz and Watson premium meat.
I can vouch for this because Dietz and Watson sent us a big box of hot dogs and other delights, and wife of the show, Lori, and I had them for dinner last night. We had the classic beef Dietz dogs with toasted buns with sauerkraut and pickled jalapenos and Dietz and Watson ballpark-style yellow mustard.
Do you think you'd recommend Dietz and Watson hot dogs for fried rice?
Oh, yeah. Fried rice with some sliced hot dogs. I'm going to be doing that soon. Wife of the show, Lori, is going to be making the hot dog flour buns from Christina Cho's cookbook, Mooncakes and Milk Bread. Very excited for this.
And I'm especially pleased because Dietz and Watson does things the right way. So this means, like, no additives, no fillers, no artificial flavors, no cutting corners. You can feel good about this stuff.
Dietz and Watson. It's a family thing since 1939.
Shop now at dietzandwatson.com/the right way.
That's Dietz, D-I-E-T-Z, and watson.com/the right way. I'm Matthew.
And I'm Molly.
And I'm still getting over a cold, so there's going to be some scratchy and, like, throat-clearing bits.
I didn't know you had a cold. You didn't tell me. I thought you told me everything.
Okay, I'll keep you apprised of all of my viral situations from now on.
Okay.
I went viral.
You went viral. Of course you did.
On an internal basis.
Okay.
It was pretty dicey there for a couple of days.
Okay. Well, anyway, we're back.
Oh, and this is the show where we cook something delicious, eat it all, and you can't have any.
Yeah, and it's early December.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is a fine time of year to talk about my favorite grain, which is farro.
I think this might be my favorite. I mean, rice is my favorite grain, but in terms of whole grains,
yes.
I think farro might be my favorite grain. Have we gotten to the point where everyone knows what this is? Do I even know exactly what this is?
Okay, well, I was the one who did the research for this episode.
So you can tell me what this is.
I can tell you what it is, and I can tell you also that it is just straight up kind of confusing.
Okay.
So even after I tell you what it
is. Straight up confusing. We're going to tell it to you straight. It's confusing.
So I think even after I explain to you what it is, you're still going to have some questions that I'm not going to be able to answer.
I am, or listeners are?
Everyone.
Okay.
Everyone. But wait, first, should we go down memory lane, or do you want me to?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it. I feel like I do have a farro memory lane because, like, sometime in, like, the late 90s, early 2000s, I feel like all the food people I knew started talking about this nutty Italian grain, and people were buying it from Bluebird Grain in Seattle and cooking it. And when the restaurant Lark opened, which is a classic Seattle, like, Northwest cuisine fine dining restaurant, Chef John Sundstrom, one of his signature dishes was farro with creme fraiche.
I remember.
It's so good. It's still on the menu at Lark. It's still great.
I haven't been to Lark in way too long.
That may have been the first time I had farro.
And that is a fantastic dish. I can still taste it. And I haven't had it in years. You know, so farro is often associated with Tuscany.
So farro, so good.
So farro, so good. And yeah, I mean, the late 90s was like,
Tuscany had a big moment.
Tuscany had a big moment, at least in the U.S. I'm not sure about other dining
cultures. Tuscany came to the U.S.
Tuscany came to the U.S. It's now based, I don't know, somewhere in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm. We were all under the Tuscan sun for a while there.
We were. Is it Francis Mayes? Francis Mayle? No.
Francis Mayes is correct.
I think so.
But like, then the movie was with Diane Lane and some Italian guy, probably.
I'm not sure. Anyway,
I mean, that movie was all about like having a life affirming fling with some Italian guy, right? That guy must have been exhausted since we all wanted to.
That was also like the premise of Eat, Pray, Love.
Interesting. I mean, not really surprising, I guess.
I mean, it seems very life affirming in general to have a fling with someone in another country when you're visiting that country.
Yes, that's also how Stella got her groove back.
Oh,
only it wasn't in Italy. I believe it was in Jamaica.
I thought Stella got her groove back with Taye Diggs. Who doesn't want to get their groove back?
I think that's right.
With Taye Diggs.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sure. Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway. Okay. So I remember when Northern Italian food came to Oklahoma City.
Okay, I want to hear about this.
There was a place called Portobello.
Of course it was.
Yeah, it was called Portobello. But also there were, you know, it started cropping up on menus in what were otherwise sort of just more like American Italian restaurants. Now that I say all this, I'm not even sure if that's when I learned about Faro. I don't know when I learned about Faro, but
okay,
this
great,
has been a
great memory lane segment.
Little trip down memory lane in which we all got our groove back and had flings.
That's true. I hear that Faro is a grain that has a cleft, which is like a groove. Good segue, huh?
Nice.
That might have been my best segue work.
Wow. Okay.
Ever on the show.
So here's the thing. All right. So I went further than Wikipedia to do my research on Faro.
Do you want a medal or something?
I wound up.
You can have my segue gold medal that I just received from the International Segue Institute.
It seems that Faro was sort of introduced to the American like foodie world.
Can I tell the listeners something? As I made that dumb joke, I mimed taking a medal off my from around my neck for no reason whatsoever.
You were just seeing it through. You have some improv training.
Okay, yeah.
You were just yes-anding yourself.
I was doing some space work.
Yeah, space work.
Okay.
Okay, next we'll do our blocking.
Okay.
Anyway, so I am really struggling.
What were you going to say? I don't see why that should throw you off your game that I interrupted you seven times.
So there was this article that came out in 1997 in the New York Times, and it was sort of like, meet Faro, the new grain you're in love with.
Yes.
That was a very helpful article, because I have to say that between Wikipedia and a whole bunch of other random articles I found about Faro, I found myself thoroughly confused about what this grain actually is or isn't.
Is it different from Kamut?
Yes.
Good.
All right. So here's the deal. Faro, F-A-R-R-O.
Uh-huh.
I hear a lot of people say Faro, but...
Sure. I mean, that seems like how you would pronounce it in an Americanized way.
The New York Times indicates Faro.
Yeah, I definitely say it Faro.
Yeah, me too. Does this mean we're un-American?
Sure.
Okay, great. It's not the first time.
You heard it here. We're renouncing our citizenship right now on the show.
Okay, but well, we're moving to Tuscany.
That's right.
We are now
citizens
part of New Jersey.
Of Tuscany, New Jersey.
Okay. Faro is the grain of a wheat-like plant that is in the wheat family. I find this very confusing. I found places that said Faro is a grain of a wheat plant. Faro is a grain not of a wheat plant. The closest
I'm finding is that it's the grain of a wheat-like plant.
Where
like, you know, botanically speaking, like we have like a taxonomy and Latin names for these things. And there's like a family of grains that are like the wheat family. And then there's one specific species that we call wheat.
Right. And that is wheat that we're able to thresh and turn into flour.
I'm able to thresh it.
Yes.
All night.
Gross. Anyway, okay, so Faro.
It's in that
family. It's in that family, all right? And it looks a lot like what you think of as a wheat plant looking. Mm-hmm. Like it has two spikes. Anyway, it's sold dried.
I was going to say like a triceratops, but that's three spikes. What's something with two horns? Pretty much everything with horns.
A bicycle?
Yeah, bicycle or a moose.
Okay. Perfect.
Those three things are all in the wheat family.
Okay. So, you know, it looks like medium grain brown rice, approximately.
Mm-hmm.
It's light brown, although I think kind of like a richer brown than brown rice, usually. It's got this cleft grain with a subtle white stripe and a little bit of white peeking out of some of the kernels.
Okay.
According to the Department of Plant Genetics at the University of Florence.
Okay. Oh, wow. You really went to the source.
I really did. Faro is an ancient unhybridized grain. Some people might call this an heirloom grain.
All right.
It's an unhybridized grain that's been used for thousands of years. It probably originated in the Fertile Crescent, so like the Middle East, North Africa. It's been found among all the things. It has been found in Egyptian tombs, along with all the other things that are found in
Those
Egyptian
tombs.
Tombs
just like were just full of all kinds of shit, right?
Who knew that the pharaohs had a lot of good stuff?
The pharaohs
Did you know that? The pharaohs had Faro.
If it's unhybridized, does that mean that Faro is a diploid wheat? Because our regular wheat, I believe, is hexaploid.
Oh, Matthew, I don't know.
Some listener will know.
Okay, yeah. It was also, so Faro, you know, ancient ancient grain here. It was also used to feed legions of soldiers during the Roman Empire.
So just did they just like get an allowance of grain and they had to figure out how to cook it and stuff?
Or was it
served like with creme fraiche?
Probably. I also saw somewhere they said that it was possibly even used as money in the Roman Empire.
I don't know. Like, it seems all of like the good things about farro, like as a tasty grain, seems like a bad form of money.
Yeah, very, very small, easy to slip through fingers.
Exactly. Yeah, like I like my money like just slipped it through a hole in my pocket. I ate it. it rotted.
Okay. So the word farro actually refers to three different grains from three different species.
Oh, okay.
And I was tremendously confused by this prior to reading it, and this was very enlightening for me. So farro refers to three different grains from three different species: spelt, emmer, and einkorn.
I've heard all of those words.
Right? Okay. They're all types of hulled wheat, or wheat that cannot be threshed.
I know I just said I could thresh all night, and now I have to ask, what is thresh?
So to thresh is to separate the part of to separate the wheat from the chaff, basically.
Okay. I know the chaff is something you don't want, but what is it?
I always thought the chaff was like the stem and like all that
stuff. I think I thought so too.
But no, what I understand now is that the chaff is part of the actual kernel.
Okay, so if it can't be threshed,
we eat it whole.
Oh, okay.
Usually. Or it cannot be threshed in the way that other wheat species can, that we might grind for flour or things like that. Anyway, in Italian cooking, the types are distinguished as farro grande, which is spelt, farro medio, which is emmer.
I like it.
And farro piccolo, which is einkorn.
Farro piccolo.
Anyway, spelt and einkorn are not the same as what we call farro in most like common parlance. They're not interchangeable. So don't swap out like spelt berries for farro.
But like,
it's
would
not
that
the
ruin the recipe?
No,
or would it just be a little different?
No, they're not the same.
Okay.
So here's the thing. Emmer is what we usually find in the US. In Italy, they often refer to it as true farro.
Okay.
And that's emmer. And it's the most common variety you find in Italy, especially in central regions like Tuscany, Abruzzo, Umbria. Anyway.
But especially Tuscany.
Especially Tuscany, yeah.
Could we get a villa?
The Latin name is Triticum diococcum. Dicoccum?
Nothing funny about that word.
Nope. Anyway, so that's the Latin for emmer. And if it's grown in the mountainous Garfagnana region of Tuscany, it can get its own, like, you know, it's not a DOC, but like its own designation, like verifying its origin. So it's very fancy if it comes from Garfagnana.
Mm-hmm. They just call it the real shit.
They call it true farro, indeed. Yeah, so basically it came to the U.S., even though this is a grain that's been around for ages in the Middle East and North Africa and whatever, it came to the U.S. and I would say came to prominence in like the cooking world through Italian food in the late 90s.
Is it something that is used outside of Italian food? Not that you can't substitute it for another like wheat berry preparation of one kind or another, but I think of it as being an Italian thing.
It's hard for me to say because I think that, like, you know, Italian food has been so dominant in the U.S. and possibly in other Western countries. It's hard for me to separate it from
that
too.
Especially since the late 90s when Tuscany was subsumed into New Jersey.
Yes.
Like, there's so much beneficial exchange that's gone on.
Right.
And
the Sopranos.
Not so beneficial.
Although I guess that was Southern Italy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of different Italian regions in New Jersey, really.
Have you ever spent a year in Provence? This episode is brought to you by Masterclass.
Matthew, take a minute and picture that thing that you've always wanted to learn.
All right. I'm picturing the thing.
Okay.
And you know, what if I get lost in the wilderness?
Well, okay. This is the thing?
This is the thing.
Oh, okay. Well, so picture learning it from someone who's literally the best at getting lost in the wilderness.
No.
In the world.
You don't understand, Molly. I want to get found in the wilderness.
Oh, okay.
So And for that, I turn to Jesse Krebs, who is an internationally recognized expert on wilderness survival. She has a class on Masterclass, and she teaches like the five basic needs. And if you think number one is water, you're wrong. She teaches you how to use a knife, how to use rope, one of your most important tools in the wilderness. I don't think I'm going to get stuck in the wilderness, but if I do, I'm going to be really happy that I took this class on Masterclass.
Yeah, well, Masterclass is where you should go if you don't just want to think about learning something, but you actually want to do it with one-on-one classes with the world's best.
Yeah, if you want to learn singing from Christina Aguilera, if you want to learn shooting threes from Steph Curry, there's only one place in the world to do those things, unless you happen to know those people, which you don't.
Yeah, you don't. And every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, so there's no risk.
And right now, our listeners will get an additional 15% off an annual membership at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
That's 15% off right now at masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
masterclass.com/spilledmilk15.
Vacations are always good. Sometimes they're even great. And Celebrity Cruises is about to ruin all of that. Because once you explore with us, you'll never want a vacation any other way. And with new quick Caribbean escapes, you'll never want a weekend any other way either. Celebrity Cruises. Nothing comes close. Visit celebrity.com, call 1-800-CELEBRITY, or contact your travel advisor. Ships Registry, Malta and Ecuador.
Here's where it's also confusing.
Okay.
So Faro is sold usually in three different formats.
The theme of this episode is to make matters worse.
Yeah. So you can buy Faro either as whole grain, and we're talking about Emmer Faro, okay? Whole grain, that means that basically the none of the bran has been removed. Stop looking at me. then it's also sold as semi-pearled, in which some of the bran has been removed so that it cooks faster. Or as like full on pearled, where it has had all the bran removed, and that's going to be the fastest cooking.
So I sometimes buy the like quick cooking Faro from Trader Joe's, which I assume means it's pearled or semi pearled, and it's not as good as like cooking the whole grain, but it's still quite tasty.
Yes,
like I enjoy it very much.
Yeah, here's the thing that I find a little bit funny. So what we're going to have today is whole Faro, whole grain Faro that was grown actually by a Washington State company, Bluebird Farms.
Yes.
Bluebird Grain Farms. Anyway, and they sell it at in the bulk section of my supermarket. And here's the thing. It's so easy to cook. I kind of don't understand. You know, you read all these articles and people are like, oh, if you're going to use whole grain Faro, you need to soak it overnight to speed up the cooking. Well, here's how long this took me to cook, okay? I did this while I was working at home yesterday. I put it 1 cup of Faro to 4 cups of water. I salted it. I brought it to a boil, let it boil for 5 minutes. Then I turned it down to a simmer, covered it, set a timer for 50 minutes, walked away, and it was perfectly done.
That's awesome. That's the
and
same
then I drained
ratio
it and it was great.
So, of grain to water I would use for like Irish oatmeal, and that doesn't even, it's not even that much longer to cook the Faro.
No, 50 minutes. I mean, I understand that like when we get home from like various after school activities and stuff, like, you know,
what after school activities are you involved in these days? Are you on the soccer team?
June's in chess club.
Really?
She is.
Does she like it?
She chose to be in it.
Okay.
Okay. So far, I got to say, you know, I know that I only have like 7.5 years of parenting under my belt. 8 years, I guess, if you figure that there's 1 year between 0 and 1.
Okay.
Right. There we go. Anyway, so far, I'm really liking the effects of peer pressure because June joined chess club because a bunch of her friends joined it.
Oh, yeah. Peer pressure is great.
And June also has now been playing the cello for 2 years, which she wanted to play because a friend of hers was playing it.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I'm like, bring it on, peer pressure. I mean, what could go wrong?
Yeah. Does she know how to play chess?
No.
Okay.
No. She's only been in chess club for like 6 weeks.
Do I know how to play chess? Not really.
I'm impressed that she knows the names of the different pieces.
That's good. That's a good start. Can she set up the board? That took me a long time. I think I can set up a chess board.
Matthew, I wouldn't know because we don't have a chess board at home. Mm. So I think that in order for me to test any of these, you know, get the answers to any of these questions, I'm going to have to get a chess board.
Question. Do you have a cello?
I do have a cello.
Okay.
Yeah. A rental cello. Cello. Oh my God, Matthew.
Oh no, don't,
cellos. You, oh,
don't
good
buy
Lord.
A cello for your child.
Oh
are you
my
insane?
God. Whew. Okay. Anyway, so here's the deal. I don't really understand why people make such a big fuss about you need to soak whole farro overnight. Like, I don't think 50 minutes of unattended cooking is a pain in the ass at all.
A couple of questions. Like, do you know how much time it shaves off if you do soak it?
I think it reduces it to like 30 minutes.
Big deal. Can you cook it in the Instant Pot?
I'm sure you could. Yeah. I'm sure you could. And here's the other thing I like about farro. So sometimes I find cooking rice to be a little bit nerve-wracking because, you know, most recipes. Wow. Most rice.
Oh, no. Now we know what your next book's going to be. Molly's recipes.
Rice recipes are designed to have, the rice is done when all the water is absorbed.
Right.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So here's what I like about farro. It's more like cooking pasta.
Sure.
So at the end, you're going to have leftover water in the pan. And you just drain it out.
Like making a riso in bianco. You ever made a riso in bianco? It's when you take like risotto style rice and just boil it in a lot of water and drain it rather than cooking it risotto style. Mm-hmm. It's like fluffy but still chewy. It's like totally different from risotto, much like lighter, but delicious.
Am I correct that is minute rice just boiled and then you drain it? I can't remember.
Minute rice is made by like parboiling and drying. Mm-hmm. But you don't drain minute rice. You cook it like when have I ever like made minute rice like as just to make rice? Probably never.
Farro? Okay. So what I have here, Matthew, this is just plain old farro that I cooked in salted water.
Oh, it's very good though.
It's really good, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I have nothing on here. Like, nothing.
Molly has nothing on here.
Nothing that should give it any flavor. And yet, it's really tasty.
And it's got like this like slightly squeaky texture mm-hmm. to it that's mm-hmm. really good.
So yeah, I cooked this yesterday. And I should also,
like, the flavor keeps developing.
It's so good.
It's so good.
I should also say that I am not one of those people who has like bought into the grain craze, mm-hmm. you know, like I remember reading some book recently that was like, no, this is not to say that people, Matthew, don't put words in my mouth. I ain't judging the grain bowls.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay, so.
Wow, you're, anyway.
I said you're no dupe, and you're like, wait a minute. Rewind there, buddy. I am.
But you're like insulting grain bowls.
I didn't even know we were talking about grain bowls.
Look, I'm just saying that lately there have been a number of cookbooks that talk about like once a week when you go to the farmer's market or mm-hmm. go grocery shopping, come home, prep everything, cook a big like Tupperware of grains. And then all week long, you can like mix up your various like vegetables that you've prepped and your grains.
Does sound pretty good.
Right? Very smart. I never do that.
Me neither.
I don't tend to, for as much as I love vegetables and mm-hmm. quote unquote plant-based eating, I have never craved a bowl of grain salad in my life.
I don't know if I've ever craved one, but like sometimes I've gotten one that was very satisfying.
But now that I have boiled these up, mm-hmm. and I will add, I was able to do this while doing other income generating work. I mean, seriously, what could be easier? Now I'm kind of like, God, why don't I always keep farro in the fridge? Because if I had like leftover roasted vegetables
sure.
or like some like a leftover piece of salmon, some like shredded chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, what a perfect thing to have around that's like filling and delicious. Matthew.
Yes.
Let's compare this with some other grains that people tend to cook and use, you know, in soups okay. or things like that. When would you choose farro as opposed to like wheat berries or barley or quinoa? Matthew, I hate quinoa.
Oh, wow.
I don't like it. I don't like the taste of it.
I neither like nor dislike quinoa. I'm fine with it. It feels neutral to me. Okay, well, definitely farro is more expensive than wheat berries or barley, but cheaper than quinoa.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important. I mean, I think this can go wherever you would use a wheat berry or probably even a barley.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I do like a beef barley soup very much, but like a beef and farro soup
oh my God, that sounds
would be
great.
Awesome.
Oh my God, that sounds fantastic.
I know, you know that recipe that I make that's like braised short ribs with wheat berries?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure if
mm-hmm.
you substituted farro, it would be great.
You know what I'm thinking? You know Ed Fretwell soup?
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of wondering, which is basically a white bean soup with vegetables. I'm kind of wondering what it would be like if I just dumped some like cooked farro in there at the end, just to sort of like
great.
Almost like turn it into almost more like a ribollita mm-hmm. texture. Like, I have no idea.
Yeah. When I make farro at home, like often I will turn it into like a one dish meal, like with some Italian sausage that I've like roasted and sliced mm-hmm. and some kind of vegetable. And
what do you dress your farro with? What do you do with it?
It depends. So like if I'm doing it that way, I'll keep it like pretty plain. So like some olive oil or butter
mm-hmm.
and salt and pepper.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm making a salad, then definitely like a tart vinaigrette.
Yeah.
That's going to cut through because it's like it's kind of deceptive because it seems like kind of mild flavored at first, but then like it kind of creeps up on you.
Randomly, someone mentioned farro to me yesterday afternoon.
Just on the street?
No, I was having a like catch up phone call with my half sister,
mm-hmm.
and she is so cool. So
mm-hmm. she lives in Tuscany.
She lives in New Jersey.
Not, oh, yeah, yeah.
No, she lives, sorry, in Long Island. Wow, God, do I even know where
Tuscany,
my own sibling lives?
News, breaking news, Tuscany has just annexed Long Island.
Anyway. No, she is like 22 years older than me and has 5 grown children.
Uh-huh.
And she recently left her job as a curator at a local art museum in her town.
Oh, wow.
To become a farmer. She's amazing.
That sounds difficult.
It's really difficult. And yet
she's growing farro.
She's thriving. She loves it. Anyway, she yesterday.
What are some of her top crops?
I talked to her when she had gotten home and she was about to make dinner. Out of the blue, she says to me, "Have you ever cooked farro?" And I was like, oh my God, are you like.
She left her job at the museum to become a psychic.
I was actually wondering if she was being currently like powered by artificial intelligence or something. So she was like, I don't know, is she listening in through like my phone or maybe my computer? So uh-huh. she's tracking what I'm searching. Maybe she isn't she, farming.
Maybe she's
farming like, data.
She's farming, exactly. She's a data miner, only a data farmer. She placed some cookies on your browser, and now she's harvesting those cookies.
Yeah. Anyway.
To coin a metaphor.
Okay. Anyway, out of the blue, she's like, "Have you ever cooked farro?" And I was like, "What?" So anyway.
You're like, great data farming, Louise.
So her name is not Louise.
I don't know. You didn't say what her name was.
Lisa.
Okay. Maybe you did.
Her plan was to cook some farro. And then maybe make sort of like a, I think she said maybe a tahini-based dressing.
Oh, that
or something.
Sounds good. We should do a tahini episode.
And toss it with a bunch of roasted vegetables from the farm.
Oh, that sounds great.
Doesn't that sound fantastic? She said.
And she can just like take vegetables from the farm without paying because it's her farm.
Well, it's not her farm. She's working on a farm.
Oh, okay. I thought she started a farm.
She did not start a farm.
Okay, I'm not impressed anymore.
Oh, you're not impressed anymore?
I'm
oh
still
my
impressed.
God.
I'm joking.
No, but seriously, can you imagine being 63 years old and deciding to go work in the heat of summer with your hands in a field?
No.
I am so impressed with her like strength and thinking about what she really cares about. Anyway, now this has turned into a motivational podcast.
Right. And doing all that and all this data mining at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so I was also saying to her that you could really toss farro with, she could also just make like a French style vinaigrette and toss the farro and the vegetables, maybe some feta in there. Mm-hmm. She was asking me like, did I think that it was appropriate to have like a French vinaigrette flavor?
I hope
you
said that was totally inappropriate.
And I said it's totally appropriate.
I can't believe you even brought this up,
Louise. I think that this is the... I think this is a really interesting thing about farro is that it works with so many different flavorings.
It seems like she had kind of a like a midlife eat, pray, love kind of experience. Like she went back to the land.
Although what she fell in love with was a sweet potato, because she told me the other day that she, the night before, had roasted a sweet potato from the farm, and she was like, it was just incredible. It was the best sweet potato I've ever had. I mean, I think she had a spiritual experience. She had a pray experience
uh-huh.
and followed her love
mm-hmm.
under
and
the Tuscan
ate,
sun
and ate her
and
love.
Became a farmer.
Yeah. The Tuscan son of Long Island. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say something. Oh, sweet potatoes. Have we done a sweet potato episode? I was joking earlier when I said we should do a tahini episode because we just did that. Yeah, but I'm not sure if we've done a sweet potato episode.
I'm not sure either.
Because I don't think of a roasted sweet potato as something I'm really into. But then every time I have one, I'm like, wow, this is really
it's
good.
So good. Yeah. Okay, wait, hold on. I do want to keep talking about what other things farro is good for.
Okay.
Delicious in soups. I mean, it shows up in just, you know, the simplest of vegetable soups in Tuscany. You could even just make a very simple farro salad that's just dressed with pesto. That's delicious.
Oh, that sounds great.
I have also used it in moujadra instead of rice.
Okay.
That's really good. So with caramelized onions and lentils.
Yeah.
So farro also contains a starch that is similar to that of arborio rice. So you can make a risotto type dish with it.
A farrotto?
Yes, indeed.
I have had that and it's very good. It's not as creamy and starchy as a risotto, but very good in its own way.
Also, I think a lot of people use it in sweet preparations too, making like a farro pudding.
I don't think I've ever had
that. A rice pudding. I have had almost like this is going to sound really gross, but it's not. Like a cheesecake, like an Italian-style cheesecake made with ricotta. I've had it with farro in it. Like grains of farro.
I think I could see
that. And a little bit of citrus zest. It was very good. So it was like, it sounds weird texturally. It didn't feel weird. And it was like nutty and creamy, but also like that kind of light creaminess of ricotta.
I like the idea of this, even though I'm kind of ricotta phobic.
Is it too like curdy?
Yeah, it's too curdy.
Yeah. Anyway,
but I've definitely had a ricotta cheesecake that I liked.
We have traveled a lot of places in this episode.
We've
met my sister, whose name is apparently Louise.
Mm-hmm.
We have gone to New Jersey. We have gone to Tuscany.
We've gone to Florida's Paradise Coast,
Long Island.
Uh huh.
And we have we've gotten our groove back.
Yes, we got our cleft back.
We've had spiritual awakenings with sweet potatoes. And we've spent some time under the Tuscan sun.
That was a really stirring summary of, I'd forgotten that we'd gone all of those places. I got a medal for something that I don't remember what the joke was anymore, but I'm going to treasure that medal forever.
Yeah.
All right. You can find us online at spilledmilkpodcast.com. Are we going to post a recipe or like a link to?
I think we could post a link to Bluebird Grain Farms.
Okay. That sounds good. Where you could order some farro if you don't have any available locally.
They also grow einkorn.
Okay.
So don't confuse your einkorn and your emmer farro.
That's farro piccolo,
yes.
I call it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/spilledmilkpodcast. Please go to either of those places and let us know what you like to do with farro, because I'm sure we left out a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us on Instagram at spilledmilkpodcast.
I also wonder if people can answer that question you had about botanical.
Is farro diploid versus like our usual hexaploid wheat?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let us know. Okay. All right.
We can look this up.
Our producer is Abby Circatella.
Uh-huh. And until next time, thank you for listening to Spilled Milk. I'm Farro Grande.
and I'm Emmer Thompson.
You know who would be a good spokesperson for farro?
Who?
Emmer Thompson.
Who's Emmer Thompson?
It's Emma Thompson, but I said it like Emmer because let's cut this part out. What if I had said Emmer Watson? Would that have been better?
Okay.
Vacations are always good. Sometimes they're even great. And Celebrity Cruises is about to ruin all of that. Because once you explore with us, you'll never want a vacation any other way. And with new quick Caribbean escapes, you'll never want a weekend any other way either. Celebrity Cruises. Nothing comes close. Visit celebrity.com, call 1-800-CELEBRITY, or contact your travel advisor. Ships Registry, Malta and Ecuador.